Okay, today is September 9th, 2015. This is an oral history interview with Joanne Carr. I can't remember whether it's the third or fourth session, but it's going to probably be our last session,
yes.
Whichever one it is. And my name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Joanne, to help us with sound quality, can you say your name and spell either your first or last name?
Yes, my name is Joanne Carr. That's spelled J-O-A-N-N-C-A-R-R.
Thank you. And that sounds like it's picking you up just fine. For some reason, it's a little light on me, so I will have to speak up a little bit. So when we last left off, Joanne, you said you were at a sort of a good stopping point because we were at a transition to where you started taking more responsibility. I think specifically for instructional media development,
Media
Development Center. So why don't we start there and then go from there?
Okay. I'm actually going to back up just a little bit to talk about sort of what led into this. In 1999, the individual who was the associate dean for information technology in the School of Education stepped down from that position. And instead of filling that position, Dean Charles Reed asked me to chair the ITSC, the Information Technology Services Collaborative, which was a group of five individuals who were responsible for major information technology projects in the school. That included the Center for Instructional Materials and Computing that I worked with, the Instructional Media Development Center, which was led by Lisa Livingston, the Wisconsin Center for Education Research's Information Technology Services led by Chris Thorne, the Portfolio Project of the school led by Steve Head, and the IT Services Office for the school led by Brenda Spicala. And so from 1999 through 2005, the five of us met and began stronger coordination among the diverse IT units within the School of Education. In 2005, as part of the budget exercise, because it was a budget-cutting year, the dean decided to remove Lisa Livingston as the director of the Instructional Media Development Center and ask me to take responsibility for the IMDC as well as the CIMC. He felt that this was a good step forward because it was there was the budget need, but my understanding of the role of the IMDC had been enhanced through my years of chairing the Information Technology Services Collaborative. So I began as director of two units, the CIMC and the Instructional Media Development Center. Directing the IMDC was a much different experience because instead of being in a unit where I had hired everyone, I was in a unit that had existing staff, some of whom who had been on staff for 25 or 30 years. And who had were kind of reeling that their director had been dismissed. They had a number of years with interim directors prior to that, so it was a bit of a stressful period for them. But it was a learning period for me as well because I knew that I needed to honor the service that they had made and try to help them rebuild as a cohesive unit. And so one of the first things I did was interview everyone in all of the staff members in that unit to get an idea of what their perspectives were and their dreams and objectives and goals for the unit were, because there really hadn't been the sort of strategic planning and strategic direction for the unit. And so that worked very well. The staff actually engaged under the leadership of Barb Smith, who I had named as assistant director for that unit. The staff engaged in an appreciative inquiry exercise and really, I think, was moving forward very, very strongly. in terms of becoming a cohesive unit. I would spend half my time in my office in the CIMC and half my time in my office in the IMDC, so that, you know, it was very clear that they were still two separate units, because that was another concern of the IMDC staff, is that they were just going to be brought willy-nilly into the CIMC and not really be given the time and attention that they needed.
Can I just quick? So was Barb Smith, was she part of the unit?
Yes, she was part of the unit. And what I actually invited members of the staff of that unit who were interested in serving as assistant director to apply for the position, interviewed, and then selected Barb.
Okay.
And all of the individuals in the unit, although it was an informal interview process, because it was a working title at that point, not a formal title, all of the members of the unit were asked to advise me on the individuals who applied, so that I did involve them in the selection process for Barb.
Was that strategic on your part?
Yes, yes. It was a staff that comprised of very, very talented individuals who had given long-time service to the unit and really needed to have their, not only have, but deserved being acknowledged and being involved in the administrative decisions of the unit. So that continued. That was in 2005, and during this time period, I continued chairing the IT Services Collaborative. But later, in 2005, the school named a new dean when Chuck Reed stepped down as dean of the school, and Julie Underwood became dean of the School of Education. And in her first meeting with me, I expressed to her concern about the diverse, somewhat uncoordinated IT environment in the school, and I said, and if that's something you would like to work on, I would be happy to be a part of that effort. And she leaned forward and said, I do want to work on it, and you are going to lead that effort. So the die was cast for my last years on campus. Over the next over the next 2 years, we had exploratory conversations both within the IT Services Collaborative and within another committee, the Information Technology Policy Advisory Committee, which was comprised of representatives from throughout the school, about the IT services in the school and the strengths and the weaknesses and how we could begin moving forward to make it a more cohesive service model for the school. The dean secured some funding to bring in a consultant who met with key representatives from both of those committees for 2 days to discuss our IT services environment. And based upon the work of that consultant, Brenda Spicala and I decided to work together with the approval of the dean to begin exploring the potential for merging the IMDC, the CIMC, and the IT services office for the school. And we knew that this was represented a major change for the school and that we needed to really look very, very carefully at the school's needs. So we spent most of 2007-2008 developing the plan and met with the chair and director of every single unit within the School of Education to gain a bit deeper understanding of their IT needs, to share with them our concerns, to hear their concerns. There were individual departments who had their own IT staff as well as the 5 distributed IT units, and we needed to talk with them about how their IT staff would collaborate or be integrated into a proposed single IT unit. Finally, in 2008, we presented a proposal to the Administrative Council of the school to develop a single IT services unit that would bring together the Instructional Media Development Center, the Center for Instructional Materials and Computing, and the IT office in IT services office in the dean's office into a cohesive unit. And that's the unit that became known as MERIT. MERIT is an acronym that stands for Media, Education Resources, and Information Technology. And that merger was approved, and I was advised by the consultant that we had spoken with before that would probably take us about 5 years for that unit to really come together and gel. It did not take that long. I think because the individuals in those units were and are very, very strong professionals, and because we really worked to, again, involve all the staff members in the development of the unit. During the same time, the School of Education was engaged in a total renovation of the education building. And so the IT services staff that had been housed in the education building needed new quarters to be housed in. And as the new director of MERIT, I invited every staff member within the new unit, formerly IMDC, CIMC IT Services, to indicate where they thought their new office should be, since we were all going to be in the teacher education building, and who their staff neighbors should be and why, so that they could begin seeing themselves as part of a larger unit and look very closely at how they would be working with the other members of the staff. We also had we had weekly joint staff meetings among all the staff before the actual merger took effect on July 1st. And we also had, I believe, 2 full-day retreats to learn what other staff members did. When the merger took place, very few people stayed in the offices that they were originally in. I actually moved from my very comfortable, spacious office with 2 windows to a windowless little office down in the IMDC, or what had been the IMDC area. And I did that because I wanted to really emphasize that it wasn't just the CIMC director taking others, integrating others into the CIMC, but rather we were an entirely new unit. We also developed an administrative core team comprised of myself as the director of MERIT, Brenda Spicala as the assistant director for IT services, Anna Lewis as assistant director for education resources, Barb Smith as assistant director for media services, and Lori Zaratica, who was our administrative assistant, to coordinate the activities of the new unit. And I would say within within a year, it was a very cohesive, well-functioning, integrated unit. The instructional role of the former staff, the staff of the former CIMC, was expanded by bringing in the talents and abilities of some of the staff of the IMDC. We saw a lot of support of instructional spaces grow because the IMDC, the IT office, the people who had been with the IT office had the technical and network and equipment knowledge. The people who had been in the CIMC had the content knowledge, and the people who had been in the Media Development Center had worked in the development of media as well as the presentation of media and with what had been AV classrooms, but mediated classrooms. And so we were able to bring all of those talents together to really strengthen our support of instructional services and instructional technology within the school. As I mentioned, the education building was being remodeled at this time as well. And so we became very involved in the in advising on the remodeling of the education building. Jesse Winters, who was a member of our staff, had come from the IMDC where he had coordinated their mediated classrooms. We were able to provide training for him by sending him to a couple of different vendors to learn about their equipment, and he assisted in developing all of the mediated classroom setups for the classrooms in within the new education building. And I'm trying to remember, I think that was 25 or 30 different classrooms that we were able to provide that assistance. We also, during this time period, just for more fun to do, had a grant from the Mortgage Foundation to integrate smart boards into teaching spaces within Merritt as well as into other buildings within the School of Education. And again, the breadth of knowledge that we had within our staff meant not only did we know we had the equipment right and the presentation technology right, but we had individuals who had the content knowledge who could assist faculty in integrating the content knowledge into what they were doing. So that was the formal merger was in 2008. And as I said, I think things were really working very, very well. I felt we had a very, very strong, fine staff. We were involved in a lot of really important work within the School of Education. We were also beginning to do some work coordinating with other units on campus in mediated instruction and classroom design issues. But as we got to late 2009, I really felt that my work was done, that the unit was working well together, that they needed someone with stronger technology knowledge than I had. I feel I was a good manager. I was able to facilitate the merger of the unit very well. But as the unit moved forward, that the technology was getting beyond my present knowledge and beyond what I really wanted to learn at that stage in my life. And so I made the decision in early 2010 and shared with the dean that I would be retiring. And so after sharing it with the dean, shared it with the staff of merit at one of our weekly staff meetings. They were shocked. Nobody saw this coming, but it was the right move for me, and I really think was very much the right move for the School of Education. They had a good, strong IT unit with a cohesive staff, with very, very talented individuals. We were getting ready for opening of the education building. Things were in place there. So it was a good time for me to step aside. And so I stepped aside. I retired at the end of July in 2010. And Merit, 5 years later, is still a strong, cohesive unit, has done some very, very interesting work under its new leader, Dan Jacobson. I think it was a good move, though shocking for me, as well as for the School of Education and for Merit.
So, Joanne, I have a few follow-up questions to ask before we sort of take these last 5 years and conclude. My first is, what, if any, relationship was there between the School of Ed, IT, and Do It?
Yes, there was some relationship because obviously we used the campus backbone. We didn't, you know, pull in all of our own wires and cables and all of that. We contracted with Do It for a number of services, but in the distributed environment that the campus had, we maintained our own servers, we maintained our own desktop support, we did our own web development, we did our own faculty support in terms of instructional development. The Wisconsin Center for Education Research IT office had all of those services with a research emphasis as well. So there was a relationship, but it was primarily that Do It provided the backbone. We actually at one point had our own email service. We did migrate to the campus email service during the same transition time. There was a lot going on. We had a relationship, but we maintained a lot of the services ourselves. Okay. We also integrated some of our IT services with the with what was happening in the libraries, for example, because we used their reserve services, and with the Social Sciences Computing Collaborative, I'm trying to remember the exact name, so that we became a member of that collaborative or consortium to provide access to very complex computing software, research computing software, statistical software that we did not want to duplicate within the School of Education, and realized it felt it was a better use of our money to become a member of the consortium because they had individuals with the expertise and they had the servers and the programs and the level of security needed for research computing.
Okay. And another thing that I was just reminded of, I think you touched on this briefly when we did our very first, very short interview at the Academic Staff Institute, and that's what relationship you particularly or the units that you ran had with Comets. So I wonder if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. I was involved in Comets in the early days of Comet. In fact, worked with, the name is escaping me, Carol. I can't remember her last name. Who really was the instigator for the Comets program. I encouraged staff members to also be involved in comments, and probably the staff member who had the strongest involvement was Catherine Stevens, who was our faculty support coordinator. But we also had involvement in comments as we got into more design of instructional spaces and worked closely in that group. We worked with some comments members for campus grants on learning objects and things of that nature. So we did have involvement with comments, although I would say Catherine Stevens is a member of our group that had the strongest involvement with that.
Okay. A couple more things. So I'm wondering if you have thought about team building, because it seems to me that through the course of your career, at least from what you've been talking about, you've really tried to make your time on campus and your leadership be more about the group and less about yourself, if I may.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering if you've ever thought about sort of what you had in you or what maybe you had learned and implemented that made you, from what I'm gathering here, a pretty effective leader and a pretty effective builder of team.
Well, thank you. I do emphasize team building, because I know that I can't have all the skills and knowledge and attributes that are important for a group to move forward or for a group to be successful. I think it's innate to me, partly because of my childhood. I am one of nine children. There were there were three older siblings, and then there were five of us girls who shared a room. I was the oldest of the five girls who shared the room. As the oldest, somehow, I was responsible. And so I think that's really where team building came from, that just for us to keep a room with five girls with a seven-year age span, happy, organized, and clean to our mother's expectations, required that I was able to work with my sisters. And we're all very, very, very diverse personalities, and I think that helped as well. Mm-hmm. So I really think that's where it came from. But I value very much building a team and recognizing that a team is not just the so-called professionals on staff, but integrating all members of the staff as much as possible. That's why, throughout my career, our staff meetings included the professionals. It included our graduate assistants. It included a representative from the student staff. It was only when the staff got so large with merit, there were, I think, 20 full-time staff and 75 staff in total. So that was not a reasonable structure for making group decisions. It was only then that I really moved into sort of this smaller leadership team, but continued to make certain that we were meeting as a staff, at least as a full-time staff on a fairly regular basis, and that there were teams being built within and between units. And I think having the opportunity for people to think about their neighbors when we merged was very, very important, because it wasn't just, you know, well, I've always wanted this office, it was rather, okay. And they were asked, you know, who do you need to be close to and what do you need to be close to? in terms of equipment and materials and collections and things of that nature. So they were really asked in that exercise where we decided everyone's staff area what they needed to be part of the staff and therefore part of a specific team. Mm-hmm. And so I think it grew out of being the oldest of the five girls and sharing a bedroom, but it's because of that, it's part of my value structure. And over the years, there were a few people that I worked with that I don't really think wanted to be part of a team, and they did not stay very long because it was so much of the value system of the rest of the staff. Does that help?
Yes, that helps greatly. It leads to another question I was going to ask anyway. And so you share a room with four other girls.
Yeah.
I noticed just a few minutes ago when you listed the early leaders of...
Yeah.
That they were all women.
Yes.
Was that serendipity?
That was serendipity. That was serendipity. I see it as serendipity. When Anna Lewis became the Assistant Director for Education Resources, I followed the same process as I did when Barb Smith became Assistant Director for the IMDC. And that is, I ask individuals to apply, and then I ask staff members to comment I interviewed those individuals, but I also ask all staff to provide input to guide me in my decision making. So Lori Zeradica was hired as the administrator for our unit, and as we know, that is a female dominated area, and I believe I believe those were all women who were hired. Brenda came in as assistant director for IT because she had led the IT office in the school of it when it was part of the dean's office. So yes, I do see it as serendipity. When Dan Jacobson came in as my successor at Merit, he maintained the same team. So,
can you or would you comment on your relationship with at least the last two deans? I don't think we need to sort of go back in time, but you've mentioned two deans in this interview, Chuck Reed and then Julie Underwood. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind commenting on your relationship with those two deans.
I believe I had a very good and very strong working relationship with both of those deans. Working with Dean Reed, with Chuck Reed, he is a very kind man, but he is also a very good leader. He did when he came on as dean, we had, as a school, prepared a strategic plan for the new dean, and I actually was a part of that strategic planning team. And when he became dean, one of the first things that I did, of course, with the staff of the CIMC at that time, was provide him with a profile of the CIMC, and he commented that was very, very important that he walked into the office, he had a strategic plan, and from us, and I don't know if from anybody else, but from the CIMC, he had a profile of our services, our staff, what we saw as our strengths, our weaknesses, our potential. So we basically just sort of laid it down on the line for him. And I think that really helped our working relationship because he did not have to spend a long time getting to know, or as much time getting to know who we were. And in doing budget requests for him, I followed the same format I had come up with, and the budget requests were always heavily narrative, which I don't know everybody did, but I would say, you know, this is our request, this is why, and would have data as much as possible to back up the request. So I think he responded very well to that. He obviously appreciated my leadership capabilities by asking me to chair the IT Services Collaborative. There were a number of other individuals who certainly were capable of doing so, and then by taking responsibility for the IMDC when the budget cut happened. That first meeting with Julie, when she leaned forward to me and actually took my hands in hers and said, "You're going to lead the IT reorganization," pretty much speaks to the relationship that I had with Julie. Again, she was very, very, very supportive, very appreciative of the information that we provided to her. Always willing to come to various events that we sponsored. We initiated the School of Education's welcome for incoming freshmen who are thinking of going into the School of Education. We initiated congrats and cakes reception for students when they were actually admitted as juniors into the School of Education. And so she made her presence known through that very well as also. Chuck also greatly admired, and I think this goes back to team building and inclusive management. When I would give my annual report to the deans each year, it would include a summary of my accomplishments as director of whatever unit or units I was working with, a summary of my professional contributions, and then a summary of the reviews or the evaluations that my staff had given to me. My staff, oh my gosh, probably for the last 25 years of my career on an annual basis was asked to evaluate my performance as director, and that information was always shared with the staff. The summary of the information was always shared with the staff and with the dean. And Chuck was very happy to get that and actually mentioned it a number of times when we would have discussions about reviews and evaluations as part of the school's administrative council.
Great. Thank you. So I think I want to move to, you talked about why you retired. I think I want to move to the sort of the legacy questions. But I think one more thing I want to ask about your time on campus. We already talked about you coming back and being the interim, but now you're back on campus as an ombudsman.
As an ombudsman, yes.
So I wonder if you could talk as much as you want about that.
All right. Yes, I in May of 2014, so it's been a little over a year, about a year and a half now, I became a member of the ombuds team on campus, and the ombuds team is an office that serves all campus employees, faculty, academic staff, university staff, graduate assistants, and student employees. We provide advice to them and a listening ear on matters regarding issues or situations in their workplace. We work on a totally confidential basis, so I can't share anything specific with you other than to say I've worked with all of those groups during all of those different employee groups. There are individuals who are facing challenges in the workplace from their supervisor, from their coworkers. There are individuals who are unsure about university policies. There are individuals who are considering their options as they think about moving into a new position. And our job is to listen to these individuals, to help them come to the right solution that's right for them. We will occasionally accompany them to a meeting with their supervisor, if their supervisor permits, so we can sort of provide a second set of ears at the meeting. We will anonymously confer with university offices about policy and procedure questions that they're uncertain if they're being treated correctly. We will refer them to the correct policy or procedure. And really what we want to do as a team is help every employee on campus be treated in a fair and equitable manner and help them realize what steps they can take to make that happen.
Why did you decide to do that?
I like having a connection with campus. I felt that my experience all those years in the School of Education with working with a diversity of staff, working with a lot of different faculty, and my experience as the interim secretary of the academic staff had given me some knowledge and skills that could be useful to that role.
Thank you. All right, so let's get to legacy. I want to ask this first question, and it might help answer the others, it may not. I wrote down here on the side that you started here as a library cataloger,
mm-hmm.
and you ended with one of the major sort of IT leadership roles in one of the major schools. Have you reflected on how that happened?
I have a bit, and part of it is I like change. I like taking on new challenges. I have good organizational skills. So part of it is just I had what was needed. But part of it was also the overall changes that were taking place in technology during my time on campus. I started my career when there were typewriters. I ended my career, overseeing a server farm. That's quite a difference. And a lot of the initial forays that I had into technology were really taking advantage of opportunities that were presented to us. The ERIC database that I've talked about before was the first database in the old dialogue pay-by-the-hour mainframe system. It was also the first database that was commercially available on compact disk. And so we were able to... I found out that was the option, realized it would offer the opportunity for individuals to do their own database searching, and so we were the first library on the campus to have a PC on our reference desk with the ERIC database disk there, and people could sit there and search their own databases, which does not sound radical now at all, but when was that? My gosh. 20 years ago now? It was radical.
Mm-hmm.
People were doing all their research in all of these really heavy books. So it started out of my library world, but schools began integrating a software into their programs and as a resource center that was supposed to mirror the sorts of resources that future teachers would be using, I knew we needed to have software in our collection, so we added software to our collection. You can't have software if you don't have the equipment to support it. And so it in many ways, I was open to change. I seized opportunities as they were there, but there were a lot of opportunities that really built upon one another, that in order to move from using a typewriter to overseeing a server farm, I had to I had to know that those options were there, think about how they were going to serve our clients, and have the support of the School of Education, which I did every step of the way.
So I'm going to ask this question directly. I think you have answered this in some of your answers, but so what do you think you'll be remembered for?
I think I will be remembered for helping the School of Education move along the information technology continuum. I think I'll also be remembered for being a person who could see connections between what others might see as disparate objects or issues and being able to bring those together. I also think I'll be remembered by my staff as the person who made caramel brownies, because one of the other things I did is I always made a birthday treat for each staff members, and that was the most requested birthday treat.
So the follow-up to that is that what you want to be remembered for?
Yeah, that's a pretty good legacy. That's a pretty good legacy.
Joanne, is there anything else?
No, can't think of a thing.
Well, I love it when I ask all the questions I was supposed to. So this concludes the oral history with Joanne Carr. Joanne, thank you so much for
your time. You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.